Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsive day for the 10th of Tevet, which is a fast day, but I'm recording it beforehand, so I'm not fasting, but it's the responsive we're going to study is actually for the 13th of Tevet. I could have done it on that day, but it includes at the end a mecha'a, a protest, an objection that was dated the 10th of Tevet, and so I use it for today. It's an issue we've sort of briefly seen on other occasions, but now comes up for Rav Kook, on the 13th of Tevet of Tafresh Tzadichet, which was 1937 still, but it's another example. I think we've seen a few where, or at least we saw one with Rav Uziel, where they spelled this year Tafresh Tzadichet, not changing it around, even though it spells out a word that means to murder. This is from Chut Dat Kohen in Yoni Yoredea Simon Kuf Tzadi Zayin. And he's writing to Rav Moshe Chaim Mervis. So Rav Moshe Chaim Mervis, as far as I can tell, was the grandfather of the current chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Ephraim Mervis. I'm pretty sure. I looked it up. I think it works out. And he was a Rav in Cape Town, which is where the current chief rabbi is originally from. So the question is about Strafat Beitim, about cremation, voluntary cremation. This is before World War II, before the Nazis do their terrible things, but it's about voluntary cremation that people ask for after they pass away. So here, we have seen together, on the 25th of Kislev, we saw together Uziel talking about the Nazi soap. And those were Jews who had been cremated, who had been burned to death, who had been burned after their death, they had been gassed and then burned afterwards, and what was said there. So here, it's going to be the different issue, because it's not about people who this happened against their will, it's about people who chose to do this. And that's going to call for a completely different experience. So there, with Rav Uziel, it was with an attitude of respect and sorrow and sadness about what happened to these people. Here, the question is, what do we do with people who have chosen to go against the Jewish practice of burial in the ground in a coffin? And that's what Rav Kook was already dealing with in 1937. So it's not like we should think that this problem of cremation is a new problem. Rav Uziel had also mentioned there was already the issue of cremation and had other tshuvot that already spoke about it. So here Rav Kook is dealing with that issue, with that question, and he says, we had a collection of Rabbanim, of the greatest rabbis of Israel, in my home, and I'm sending to you at the bottom, and that's what was going to be dated 10th of Tevet, and it's to be interesting that it's 10th of Tevet, because 10th of Tevet is a fast day that's about seeing troubles that are coming, because 10th of Tevet is a fast day that reminds us of when the siege was set by the Romans, so it's like the first step in a process towards national disaster. It seems to me fitting and appropriate then that these Rabbanim, that these rabbis took the 10th of Tevet to see a problem with cremation and to protest it, to complain about it, and to be worried about it. So he's going to include that at the end, we'll get to it. He says it's clear that we have a minhag, we have a custom, we have a common Jewish practice to bury in the ground. And the people who choose not to, he says it's very clear that they come from people who really don't want to observe Torah and mitzvot anymore, and they're not interested in it. And that's why they are open to the idea of cremation as opposed to what Jews always do, which is to bury in the ground. So to that extent, Rav Kook says, even if burial was, in quotation marks, just a minhag, rak minhag be'alma, if it was only a minhag and that's all it is, you'd still have to support it. We'd still have to say that we think it's important that Jews follow the customs of their forefathers. We have Gemaras that talk about this. This is why the whole practice of, among other things, this is why the whole practice of second day of Yom Tov continues. Hizaru minhag avotechem b'yadechem. It is the obligation of Jews to follow the customs of their forefathers, unless something steps in to say that we should change in whatever ways we are or are not allowed to change. And he quote points out that the Yerushalmi says that minhag oker halacha, there's Rav Hoshaya in the Yerushalmi, a minhag mevatel, sorry, not oker, there's another, I think it's another Yerushalmi that says oker, he has a minhag mevatel halacha, can turn aside actual halacha. And here there's no competing halacha. The Rambam goes further, he thinks it's a prohibition to leave bodies unburied, to leave people unburied, and it's a commandment in the Torah of, we're going to talk about it in a second, but ki kavor tikperenu, the Torah says regarding somebody who had been put to death by a court and then hanged to demonstrate that he had been put to death by a court, the court says you can't leave him hanging there, ki kavor tikperenu, you have to bury him. So he says, even if it was just a minhag, you'd have to stand against it. But it happens to be, this is, even if it's just a minhag, it's a minhag that's mentioned several times in the Torah, but in fact, Rav Kook says, Mina burning a body, cremating a person who has passed away, is certainly a problem because it contradicts the Torah saying Ki Kavartik Berenu. There is a debate in the Gemara as to how far Ki Kavartik Berenu goes. There were those who held, and Shibor Malka seems to have been quoted there, all that Ki Kavar, it only sounds like you have to make a coffin and you have to put him in a coffin. So a mausoleum, like an above ground mausoleum. Shibor Malka, who was not an Torah authority, would have thought that sufficed to fulfill the obligation to bury. But to put it in the ground in particular, that's the extra word of tikbirenu. Why not just say kabor, or ki tikbirenu, I guess, but that extra word tells us that it's got to be in a coffin, it's got to be covered up, basically, and in the ground. Once the Torah gave a form for burial, even if it didn't specifically command it, once it told us that's the proper form for burial, then you can't change it. No, it's like any other, I'm sorry, it is a mitzvah. It's like a mitzvah, like any other mitzvah in the Torah. We can't just change it, and we can't just say, oh, there's a better way to do it. We don't do that with mitzvahs. The part of Judaism is that we have mitzvahs, we have obligations, we fulfill them the way the Torah tells us to. Then he brings here, he just points out that even cases where the Torah is not so explicit, we have to fulfill at least the basic meaning of what the Torah wanted of us. So a famous example is when it comes to minachot, so the Torah says you should mix the flour with the oil that's being brought with the mincha. So in fact, the halacha is you don't have to mix it. But the Gemara assumes that one is required to only bring that amount of flour that could be mixed with oil. So that's why above 60 sa'ah, I think it's sa'ah, it's assumed that you can't bring it. And the phrase that the Gemara uses, which is applied in many areas of halacha, is kol ra'uy labila ein bila me'akevet bo, kol she'ein ra'uy labila bila me'akevet bo. As long as the amount of flour you're bringing could have been mixed with the oil in the container that it's in, so then you don't have to do the actual mixing. So if Cook quotes that here, or cites that idea here, to say that it's showing us that when the Torah tells us something, at the very least we have to have some basic form of it. So Ki Kavartik Berenu too must mean some basic form of Kvura. And now he goes on and says, to general principle of mitzvahs, that we don't change what the Torah tells us to do. Meaning those who are cremating now are uprooting something that's in the Torah. They're going against an actual, in our tradition, at least in the realm of tradition, an actual explicit explicit observance demanded by the Torah of burying. So then he points out the Gemara elsewhere has a discussion, I think it's in Brachot, but it could be in Moed Katan, I don't remember. I think maybe it's in Moed Katan. Who has a discussion of, let's say, a man or a person who's about to pass away says, I don't want you to bury me. So the Gemara seems to discuss whether Kavur is Mishum Biziona or Mishum Kapara. If the point of burial is, the second option is the easier option to talk about, is to give the person atonement, so then it would seem to be that the person has the right to turn it down because you're not required to accept atonement. The first issue is biziona, is that it's a disgrace. And when Rav Kook's going to say, what we mean by disgrace is a disgrace to the human race, that there be, or maybe to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that there be a human corpse just lying around. So if that's the issue, it's not in the person's right to give it up and to say, I don't want to be buried. And that's what Gemara says. The nafka mina between the two options would be, if he says, I don't want to be buried, so whether we have to bury them or not. Rashi says, if he says, I don't need the kapara, I don't need the atonement, I don't want it, I don't care about it. So he says, theoretically, either you wouldn't bury the person, or you might be that you have to bury him because we have to bury people anyway, but he doesn't get the kapara for it. He, having turned down the atonement that could come with burial, and that atonement would come from the fact that there's a tradition that the body, the person who had passed away, the soul of the person who passed away is still connected enough to the body that the soul feels the experience of burial, and that burial, that experience, the pain and suffering, I think, of decomposition, of being in the ground, of all of that, provides some atonement. So the person says he or she doesn't want the atonement, they can lose it, they can forfeit it, but it doesn't necessarily mean they have the right to turn down burial. But from the fact that the person doesn't get kapara then for it, it would seem to be, Rav Kook says, it would seem clear that that means that the person is doing something wrong, because a person doesn't have the right to generally turn down atonement. If I come to you and say, listen, you have the ability to wipe away all the things you've done wrong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and in your relationship with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, with Hashem, and you say, not interested, Rav Kook is saying that itself is obviously a problem. So even if you were to take the side that it's Mishum Kapara, that is for atonement, and that therefore in some way the person might have the ability to turn it down, it's still a violation to do so, because it's not good to turn down kapara. You're supposed to want kapara, and we're all supposed to realize that we need as much kapara as we can get. So how would we turn down such a thing? So it must be that the person allows his or her soul, as Rav Kook writes this, that a person should allow his or her soul to be lost in the sense of not having atonement when atonement was available, that's a great prohibition. So, he says, we have no real way to help these people then, because in their decision not to be buried, in their decision to be cremated, so there's so many problems. More than that, not only are there problems that we've said so far, problems of it's an obligation to bury that they're turning down, it might be an issue of securing atonement and they don't want to secure atonement, and that itself is a problem, right? But it's also true that they are, by doing so, supporting the side of people who say it's not necessary to get kapara. Meaning, Rav Cook is pointing out, and people don't always think about this, I think, most people, I think it doesn't come up, but Rav Cook is pointing out that part of the Jewish ritual of dealing with those who have passed away is bringing them to some kind of final atonement even before they get to their judgment in the world to come, because the burial process might have that element to it. Somebody would turn that down and would say, I'm not interested, so that's building up a group of people in the Jewish people that we would prefer not to have, those who think that their relationship with Hashem is so insignificant and so unimportant that they don't need kapara, they don't care about kapara, they don't care about atonement, and they leave their sins on themselves, that's a very big problem. If it's the Biziona side, so the Kesef Mishnah says the Biziona is Biziona de Kulu Chaye. It's the Bizayon, it's a disgrace to all of humanity. It's not this person or his family. You might have thought the person who's passing away doesn't have the right to turn down burial because that's an embarrassment to the family. And he or she doesn't have the right to cause such embarrassment to the family. But the Kesef Mishnah held it's not just to the family, it's to all of humanity, because to have people just lying around unburied is says something shameful about us, that we don't take care of those who have passed away in the way we should. And he says, anything that people in general, especially Klal Yisrael, especially the Jewish people, and then he throws in a line here that I don't have anything to think he doubted, but doesn't always conform to the picture of a cook that we think of. He says, Vishomrei Torah umachzikei emunah b'Yisrael, those who observe the Torah and uphold the proper faith of the Jewish people. And then he adds, Shehem ikar v'yisod ha'umah kula b'kdushata, who are the essential part and the foundation of the entire nation in its sanctity. So whatever Rav Cook thought about the non-observant Jews of his time and the farmers and the people who were building up Eretz Yisrael, and I have no reason to doubt that he thought well of them in the senses that he's famous for thinking well of them, nonetheless true that when it comes to defining the center of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people, especially in deciding what the ethos of those Jews, because here he's talking about whatever they are machzikim lebizyona, whatever they hold to be, to qualify as a bizayon, as a disgrace to the Jewish people, that's what defines it. So I believe it's both. I don't think he's like contradicting himself. It's both true that he had greater respect for the non-religious of his time who were building up the land of Israel than many Rabbanim of his ilk would ordinarily have had, at the same time as he still firmly held to the feeling that what defined proper Jewish thinking on an issue was not by them. Because you might have said, well, if nobody else thinks it's a bizayon, why is it a bizayon? If nobody else thinks it's a disgrace to be cremated, that's what people do nowadays. It's not a disgrace, it's not a disgrace. So his answer is, first of all, humanity still thinks of it as a disgrace. So that's an answer that might work for his time. But let's say we came to a time, you know, we're rapidly, I am stuck in the exile in America. So here in America, it's rapidly becoming true that people in general think of cremation as certainly no worse than burial. So if they don't think of it as a bizayon, maybe the answer is it's no longer a disgrace, and maybe therefore if a Jew says, I don't need to be buried, we would accept it. So his point is that for the side that says the problem with not burial is that it's a bizayon, the definition of bizayon, the definition of what's the disgrace to the human condition and its disgrace to the Jewish condition, would be set not only by people in general, but by those Jews who are Shomrei Torah mitzvos, who observe the Torah and who have the proper faith in the Torah. Proper faith in the Torah is a whole other standard. It might be that you have today, I'm pretty sure we have today, people who are fairly good about observing Torah mitzvot, but are unfortunately sadly lacking in their belief system about Torah and Mitzvot. And I think Rav Cook would say that such people too don't really count in terms of defining a bizayon. So if I'm talking with somebody and they don't really believe in whatever faith issues of Judaism there are, we're going to get to the one that's central to this issue. Let's say they don't believe in the underlying factor that leads us to prefer burial, so they won't count for this discussion. And therefore, if we're trying to figure out whether the sense of burial has changed, I won't include them. In any case, Rav Kook says, back to Rav Kook, V'chalila l'asur miderech ha-kodesh ha-mugzeket me'avot ha-olam. And God forbid that we should stray and turn away from the paths of our forefathers. In other words, for all that, he was willing to do lots of things that his forefathers had never done. When it comes to burial, his point is that this is just an expression of how Jews, traditional faithful Jews, approach the world, and that includes burial, for reasons we're about to see. He says, even if you look in an area that you might have thought would be different and we'd be less concerned with this issue, we worry about nivul, we worry about mistreating the human body. And that's in the case of somebody who has sinned in a way that they need hereg, they need to be put to death by the sword or something like the sword. So there's a machloket in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, the general opinion. The general opinion was that the person puts his head like on a tree stump on a flat surface, and you take a sword and you behead him. And that's what hereg is, the death penalty of hereg, which is only given for a couple of sins, so it doesn't come up that much, one of them being murder, but it doesn't come up that often. But when it does, that's what they say that it is. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can't do it that way, because that's the way the malchut does it, that's the way the kings do it, and that is a nivul. That is an inappropriate and unacceptable ruining of the body, right? It mistreats the human body and that person's body. So even though this person is being the death penalty, Rav Yehuda thinks that you're not allowed to put him to death in a way that's too much of an evil, that ruins the body too much. So the Chachamim, who we actually rule, according to whom we rule, and we follow this, so if there were ever to be a Sanhedrin again, and if unfortunately they were forced into a situation where somebody had committed a crime in such a way that they became liable for hereg, so when Chachamim say you do it in that way, they didn't say it, they only said it because the Torah says to put him to death by the sword. If it hadn't been written, though, then even though the way that Rav Yehuda suggested is even worse of an evil, I'm sorry, that's the point. Rav Yehuda's way was worse. He said you took like a narrower blade and you sort of killed it. It took a long time to kill the person. You took their head off their body, but in a way that took a long time and was very painful and destroyed the body in a much more serious way. But he said, I can't do it the other way. I can't do it with a sword because that's the way non-Jews do it. And we can't imitate the non-Jews. So the fact is, the Chachamim don't disagree. Chachamim say, no, we ordinarily can't imitate non-Jews and do what the non-Jews do, but since it's written in the Torah, we are allowed to do it. Rav Kook is quoting all of this to point out that we have to worry about nivul, about mistreating human bodies. And that's true of somebody we're putting to death. So all the more so, he says, when it's somebody who's died ordinarily and we're just worried about burying them in the proper way and showing the proper respect for the person who's passed away, proper respect is what's written in the Torah. Like beheading was written in the Torah, here it's proper respect is written in the Torah, and that is burial. Happens to be that this whole discussion of whether it's a question of disgrace, right, it's not proper respect, or it's a question of kapara, the Rambam doesn't include that discussion in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam just says that if a man says, a person says, don't bury me, we don't listen to that person and we bury them because the burial, because burial, Rambam says, burial is a mitzvah. Quoting the verse, ki kavarti kvarenu, you have to bury the person. So Rav Kook points out that the Rambam doesn't mention the reason of bizyona. Right? That's what the Gemara seems to say. The Gemara seems to say if burial was a matter of atonement, then the person would have the right to refuse it, would seem. But if it's a matter of disgrace to the human condition to see bodies not buried, then the person doesn't have the right. So you might have thought that when the Rambam rules, the person doesn't have the right to say so, that should mean then that it's a matter of bizayon, it's a matter of disgrace. But the Rambam doesn't include the reasons. Rav Kook pauses to say that's because he thinks that's because, you can read the Rambam lots of ways, and there are people who have, but Rav Kook says that's because he thinks that the Rambam doesn't include reasons in the Mishnah Torah, which is fascinating as a claim because in the end of the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam goes out of his way to give reasons for mitzvot in the Torah. So Rav Kook thinks that in the Mishnah Torah, however, the Rambam passes without paying attention to reason. He gives a couple of interesting examples. One example is that when it comes to a widow, the Torah warns us against mistreating a widow and has a certain halachot about having to give her back her things and not take things from her because she's a widow and defenseless. So there's a debate in the Gemara about whether that's true only of poor widows or it's true of all widows, meaning a rich widow, you would have thought, isn't, it's taking a mashkon from her, right? It's taking property of hers as collateral for a loan. So you might have thought with a rich widow, who has plenty of money, and it's not a problem for her, you might have thought that she shouldn't be included. So that's called Darshinan Tama Dekra. That's called deriving the reasons for mitzvahs, for commandments in the Torah, and then following the reasons. So if the reason is that she doesn't have anything else, or she's defenseless, or she's going to be worried about it, or it's a problem for her as a widow because she feels different than everybody else, so that might apply only to the poor, not to the rich. But the Rambam paskins, it applies to everybody. And that's even though, Rav Kook points out, in the end of Mori Nevuchim, the Rambam says, but the Torah does have reasons. And he points out there's a Gemara in Brachot that says that if a chazan says, Al kanzi po yagiu rachamecha, that your mercy goes upon the nest of a bird, meaning you commanded us in the Torah to send away the mother bird before we took the birdlings, the chicks, the baby birds. So the Mishnah, I think, has the opinion of Rav Yochanan, you have to get rid of that chazan. You know, let's say al kanzi po yagiu rachamecha, because the Torah isn't the rachman of Hashem, it's a gzeira, it's a decree of Hashem. The Rambam writes in the end of Mor Nevuchim that Mishnah follows the opinion of some of the side of discussing Torah that says there are no reasons for mitzvot, that we don't or can't know the reasons for mitzvot. So that would be the reason you can't say al kanzi po yagiu rachamecha, because that implies the reason for the mitzvah of shiluach haken is that it's compassion for the mother bird. That would imply there are reasons for the Torah. And the Rambam says, that's one opinion, but we hold that there are reasons for the Torah. And then he proceeds to give reasons for the Torah. Now that should have meant then that the Rambam wouldn't have a problem with the chazan who says, al kanzi po yagiu rachamecha, because that person knows that the reason for it is racham, etc., etc. But if you look in the Mishnah Torah, when the Rambam passed that halacha, he passed that, no, it's not true that a chazan can't say such things. And so therefore, too, says Rav Kook, the Rambam doesn't include the reason for why burial is necessary, and doesn't include the question of whether it's for atonement or for worry about bizayon, about the wrong impression it gives for how we treat our deceased, and therefore that's what it is. So I think you can say a lot of things about that Rambam. I'm not saying the Rav Kook is the only way to read those Rambams. I'm pretty sure there are other Achronim who read that issue differently than the Rambam, but for our purposes, it reminds us that burial is an absolute necessity, and that the Rambam ignores the issue of reasons there. Another problem with cremation that Rav Kook points out is that we have a general principle that we can't imitate non-Jews. We've seen this in other contexts when we've spoken together. I'm sorry, it slipped my mind. I know that we've seen a tshuva together where there was a discussion with whoever was the Meshiv was quoting the Maharik at length because the Maharik was giving reasons for when we do or don't follow the non-Jews about something, and I can't remember what it is. If you remember what it is, please feel free to email me at grothst@gmail.com. That is my email with that comment or any other comments. But in any case, I can't remember it now. But in any case, Rav Kook says, we're not allowed to follow non-Jews for the sake of following non-Jews, even if it's not an Avodah Zarah issue, even if it's not an idolatry issue. We're just not allowed to generally follow them. He gives examples. Somebody says, I only serve as chazan if I'm wearing colored clothing or if I'm wearing certain shoes. So then we don't let that person lead anymore anyway because he seems to have absorbed some idea from non-Jews and from heretics that we don't want to accept. So, and the Rivash says in a tshuva that that's true even if we don't have any heretics or non-Jews for whom that's a huge issue. The fact that this person decides to be insistent about something that the Torah doesn't think we have to be, so that's a Rivash that one could wonder about, because certainly in the intervening centuries from the time the Rivash wrote, we've seen many brands of Jews come up with issues that they decide are absolutely vital, that are not absolutely vital. So the Rivash was right in each of those cases, we should have a problem with it, because what the Rivash says is, this is the Rivash as Rav Kook quotes him, in Reish Chaf Dalet, the Rivash says, even though we don't know of any heretics who are makpid on these issues, who are careful about these issues, since this person cares, when Jews don't tend to care, we have to worry, Shema Ruach Apikorsin in Zekarba, maybe some other kind of heresy has sort of become enrooted in him. So that's a remarkable claim, because I think I would wonder if it would apply, how far would I apply this? Meaning, let's say somebody says, well, I'm only going to go up if I have my gartel with me. So not that I have anything particular against the custom of gartel, except that, so the gartel you could say is because there's a Gemara that talks about that you have to have some separation between the upper part of your body and the lower part of your body, but if they have a gartel in addition to a belt and they insist on putting the gartel on, you could say what the Rivash said. So I'm sure there are answers to this. I'm not saying that, but that whole question I think is an interesting one to think about, is when people insist on something that Judaism itself doesn't see as absolutely necessary, what is the status of that? Coming back to our burial issue, Rav Kook says here it's not just that we're worried that the non-Jews do or don't do it. It's that here it's a Jewish thing, a long-standing, that we care very much about burial. Not that Rav Kook brings it up, but in the Parshiot of Chayei Sara, people talk about it, including, I think I've heard it quoted in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that the Jewish concern with burial and property that we own goes all the way back to Avraham Avinu, was a model for all of us, and certainly Yaakov Avinu did it, cared about it as well, so did Yitzchak. And so burial, Rav Kook is pointing out, is a very important issue to Jews, and therefore we have to do everything we can to stop this from spreading. And therefore, it's clear, he says, that there's no obligation to bury the ashes of such people. Right? Because, first of all, there's no tumah in terms of kohanim. That we saw before in the 25th Kislev 1 about the soap. There's no tumah of ashes for the reasons that we saw before. He doesn't express why. He just takes it for granted. He points out, there's a gemara that says, Eifas Ruf Imeinu Mitame. So maybe he says you should bury it because people might think that they can get hana, some kind of benefit from it, and you can't. So for that, he says, you don't necessarily have to put it on the ground, and you wouldn't want to put it on the ground for him, because for him, it makes it seem like it's almost like a body. He says, as long as you put it in a container, that's good enough for that purposes. And therefore, and he says, no good, believing, observant Jew should be involved in this. Because these people, he says, they have left the ways of the community, and they've gone to deod zarot, to foreign ideas. Shadavar pashut hu shakvura mechazeket baleiv kol Yisrael etamuna b'tchiyat hamitim. And here's where we get to the real punchline, right? The reason why all this is so important is because burial of a human body displays the belief in the bodily resurrection of the dead, which is a principle of faith. And he quotes a pasuk in Daniel, this is the pasuk that the Rambam claimed was the one verse that proves in Tanakh that we believe in bodily resurrection of the dead. So he admits that, sure, Hashem could put together people who are cremated, meaning everyone understands that bodies, human bodies that are buried in the ground, decompose to the point that there's really nothing left. There's the bones stick around for a while. After a while, even those eventually decompose to a large extent. So if somebody was cremated, of course Hashem could bring them back together. And not only that, he says, v'chol ha'kdoshim shenisrafu ba'esh. And this is 1937, so he's not talking about the Holocaust. He's pointing out in Spain and other places there have been good, faithful Jews who have been burned, either burned to death, sadly, or who have been burned after they're passed away. So those people are certainly, there's no reason to think they're not going to be resurrected, as the Ramban writes about at length in Shaar HaGmul. He's writing even before the Inquisition in Spain. So it's just something that happened, and we know about it. We have it in the Gemara, people being burned to death. So of course those people are going to come back at the Kedah Meitim. So it's not that Hashem can't do it, but if somebody rejects Jewish, even just Jewish custom, but all the more so if it's a mitzvah in the Torah, and they reject it to join it because they want to separate from the community. That issue of separating from the community is very big for Rav Kook, and it's interesting, and that might be why he was so moved to talk about the non-observant Jews of his time in general, the ones in Israel who were building up Eretz Israel, because I think it might have been he was trying to say to himself, they're not really Parshim Midrash Hetzibur, they're not really leaving the community, because they're moving to Israel at great cost to themselves. So in this case, he says, somebody who chooses cremation and in that way removes himself from the community, he thinks that Jews do not need to get involved in dealing with those ashes and taking care of them, especially since burial is supposed to be about a reminder of bodily resurrection of the dead, because it reminds us that this body needs to be treated well because it itself will one day come back. So he says, yeah, it's true. If you cremated it, it could also come back because people were burned against their will come back in Tchiyat HaMeitim. But this is supposed to be a reminder to us, and it's a vivid reminder, and you're losing it. So that's the tshuva. Now he has the form of the mecha'a, of the protest. This is the one that's signed on the 10th of Tevet of Tav Reish. You know what? This one says Tzadi Hei. So it was almost 3 years earlier that the mecha'a was written, unless somebody got the dates wrong on one or the other of them. Because on the top, the tshuva is dated the 13th of Tevet, Tav Reish Tzadi Chet, and the mecha'a is dated Tav Reish Tzadi Hei. I have to think that one of those is wrong, just because they're too close to each other in writing, and because the days are too close, and because he says we've just done had this meeting. So it's so the Mecha reads the people signed below, and the people signed below are and some of them are who's who. There's Rav Chaim Pesach Frank, there's Rav Kook, and then other people who I don't know, but I'm sure were clearly important Rabbanim of their time, and they say we're coming to protest this pritzah, this breach of standards of those who come new, who want to uproot traditional boundaries, traditional ways of preserving Judaism, and to do terrible things in terms of cremating people, and you can't do it, and you got to make sure not to accept it, and you got to make sure not to bury the ashes of such people in a Jewish cemetery. So that is Rav Kook speaking about cremation, speaking against cremation forcefully, about the need to follow customs in general. Certainly this, not only custom, but likely mitzvah in the Torah, especially since it also has an important faith component to it, and that all means that those who decide to go in another direction are leaving the ways of the community, rejecting at least the custom and likely much, much more, and doing it, it would seem, out of a lack of faith in certain very important principles of the Torah. That's Rav Kook. He was right on the 13th of Tevet, but we've chosen to learn it as a responsible day for the 10th of Tevet. Have a great day.